Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Zvito is saying that the mayor is the only one that can give the assembly permission for us to have conversations in the community. I think that's an outrageous statement to make.
Anchorage's assembly and mayor remain at odds over sheltering the homeless heading toward winter. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, August 25th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough School District deals with its bus driver shortage.
What does a bus stop look like out in the middle of somewhere near Houston, say? Like, is that even practical?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's waters and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help stop aquatic hitchhikers by remembering to clean boots, boats, and trailer to remove plants, animals, and mud, drain bilge, ballast, and buckets before leaving the area, and dry equipment before using it in a new body of water. Learn more at stopaquatichitchhikers.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
A Palmer man has been convicted of murder after killing 2 people in 2016 during a series of robberies in the Wasilla area that targeted locations he believed were used for drug trafficking. But 36-year-old John Pearl Smith II will not face the death penalty at his sentencing, as federal prosecutors had originally sought. A jury convicted Smith on murder, robbery, and gun charges Tuesday. Prosecutors say Smith shot and killed Ben Gross and Crystal DiNardi in Wasilla during an attempted robbery in 2016. While he was in jail, prosecutors announced in 2018 that they would seek the death penalty under a directive from then U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Alaska does not have the death penalty, but Smith's case was charged under the federal system, which does include capital punishment. In 2021, current Attorney General Merrick Garland announced that all federal executions would be halted pending a review. Smith's sentencing is set for December. He faces the possibility of life in prison. A task force that the Anchorage Assembly wants created to address winter sheltering for homeless people will continue its work. That's after the Assembly today overrode Mayor Dave Bronson's veto of the group in a 10-1 vote with Eagle River member Jamie Allard opposed. This is the latest in a string of vetoes and veto overrides since Bronson took office. Midtown Assembly member Felix Rivera described it at today's meeting as, quote, probably the strangest veto that we've got so far, unquote.
This veto is saying that the mayor is the only one that can give the assembly permission for us to have conversations in the community. I think that's an outrageous statement to make.
The resolution, passed by the Assembly last week, directs the Anchorage Coalition to End Homelessness to put together a task force of community stakeholders and providers to come up with a plan to shelter people in the winter months. In his veto, Bronson asserted that the Assembly was creating an official municipal advisory body, like a board or commission, without going through proper protocol. Municipal Attorney Mario Byrd says the Assembly needs to be clear about how much weight the recommendations from the task force have.
If this is something that's a municipal body, we've got a notice under open meetings procedures, and if this is something that is aspirational to advise, it should be made very clear that it falls outside of the advisory bodies that are included in the code provisions for boards and commissions.
Assembly members say the task force is needed because the Bronson administration does not have a winter sheltering plan, while the administration maintains that it does. At an assembly meeting this week, Bronson said his administration was looking at several municipal buildings to shelter people. East Anchorage Assembly member Forrest Dunbar asked about specifics, prompting a response from Bronson's chief of staff, Alexis Johnson.
Through the chair to Mr. Dunbar, we have 4 identified at this point. We are working with the fire inspectors and with the building department to ensure that we can, you know, put people in those buildings. Thank you.
Which 4 buildings have you identified?
Through the chair to Mr. Dunbar, I will have that list published by the end of the month. Thank you.
Currently, the mayor's emergency shelter plan on the city's website only includes application information for organizations to apply to operate a shelter. Both the fall chum salmon and the coho salmon runs on the Yukon River remain too low to open subsistence harvest. State biologists do not expect either to reach their goals for fish reaching their spawning grounds. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
An estimated 3/4 of the fall chum salmon run is past the lower river. So far, the state-run sonar at Pilot Station has counted less than 200,000 fall chum. That's compared to a historical median of nearly 500,000 fall chum by this time. The fall chum that have returned are slightly older than the historical average and with slightly fewer females than the historical average. The fall chum are also smaller, measuring 26 millimeters less than their historical average length. For Yukon River coho salmon, that run is also far below its average run size, but coming in higher numbers than last year's record low. The Pilot Station sonar has counted 43,000 coho compared to a historical average of 73,000 by this time. Like the fall chum, the coho are also returning smaller. The coho are averaging about 30 millimeters less than their historical average length. At Russian Mission, state biologists have attached radio tags to more than 100 coho. The Department of Fish and Game asks anyone catching a coho carrying a tag to call the department at 907-459-7274. That's 907-459-7274. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
The state's largest school districts continue to deal with a bus driver shortage as the academic year begins. In the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District, the large geographic area it covers adds additional challenges. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas reports.
The Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District covers nearly 25,000 square miles. That's larger than West Virginia.
It's more than 10,000 miles a day that our buses are covering. It's a big task.
Randy Traney is the district superintendent. A week before school started, he says the district school bus contractor, Durham School Services, had enough bus drivers to staff all 130 routes in the district.
Thursday night, very, very late, like after 10 o'clock, I heard that they had a bunch of drivers who ended up staying on with other industry, the cruise ship industry, because they received huge bonuses.
That, along with some failed physical exams, left the district without enough drivers. And now the district is short about 25 drivers. If someone gets sick, they're down even more. To deal with the shortage, the district has canceled bus service one day a week per route. That's a different approach than the Anchorage School District, which divided its routes into 3 cohorts and staffed each cohort for 3 weeks out of 9.
We're trying to stay away from the multiple weeks at a time, like ASD. I mean, every district is different and has to do what's right for them. But we think it's harder for our families, many of whom commute to Anchorage, like 30,000 a day. They might be able to handle one day or 2 days a week where they have to call in late, but 6 weeks in a row, that's probably not going to work for people in the valley.
Durham School Services is offering $1,500 bonuses to new drivers. But Traney says without enough state funding, there's not much else school districts can do to compete with tour companies for a small pool of workers.
In the state of Alaska, the transportation dollars haven't been changed for 8 years. You know, it's not a huge coincidence that this 3 largest school districts in the state are all simultaneously struggling to find contractors who can get enough people to drive buses.
Last year, he says, the district had its buses fully staffed by mid-October as the tour season came to an end. For now, district leaders are considering their options for the weeks ahead. One could involve buses picking up students from central locations around the district, rather than driving through neighborhoods.
Can we institute a hub system in the Matsu Valley? What does that look like? You know, like if you had what does a bus stop look like out in the middle of somewhere near Houston, say? Like, is that even practical?
Once they come up with an answer, Traney says, the district plans to update families in the coming days. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the volunteer DJ spinning gospel music every Sunday in Kotzebue.
And there's guys that say that. I don't go to church, but I listen to every Sunday morning. These are big and tough guys, you know.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
A local group is continuing to fight potential development of large gold mines in the Fairbanks area. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, Save Our Domes has broadened its perspective to include new prospects north of Fairbanks.
Save Our Domes, originally Save the Domes, formed last year in response to a project on Esther Dome, where public opposition resulted in leases being withdrawn and exploration paused. Save Our Domes held a public meeting Tuesday, and the group's Anna Gadoon said they're rebooting as gold exploration work targets additional areas north of Fairbanks where people live and recreate.
We don't figure that any of these neighborhoods really stand a chance on our own. But from Esther to Amanita in the hills, that's probably like 10,000 people. And maybe a third of them are like, gold mining. But the rest of us are like, no.
If there's enough of us that do not want these mines, we can't be a silent majority.
Save Our Domes organizer and geologist Sarah Henschen outlined the exploration areas with gold deposits that could also lead to large open pit and or underground mines. Henschen says they include Treasure Creek east of Old Murphy Dome Road, Golden Summit around Cleary Summit, Amanita off Chena Hot Springs Road, and others northeast of Fairbanks.
There's a huge boom in exploration.
Henschen explained the multi-step process to develop a new mine from definition of a deposit to feasibility studies and permit applications.
The permitting stage can take quite a long time, and there's still going to be, I would say, at least 2 to 3 more years of exploration before it even goes into, before they kind of make a package to sell to a production company. So we have a little bit of time, which is nice. You know, no one needs to panic.
Henschen said the process can be elongated further if the price of gold dips and a project gets shelved until gold rebounds. Demand for gold used in technology like computer chips is often highlighted to justify mining, but Henschen says only 8% of gold produced around the world is used by industry, and the rest goes to jewelry, personal investment, and central banks.
Why do we need to extract new material from the ground to support industry uses when we have literal tons and tons and tons of perfectly usable material sitting in vaults?
Save Our Domes is trying to recruit a resident from each of the 4 Fairbanks areas where new mines could be developed to serve on the group's board of directors. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings spent $20 million for nearly 3 acres of prime Juneau waterfront property in 2018, beating out the city and borough of Juneau and other bidders with an offer that was more than 5 times the appraised value of the land. This week, Norwegian gave that property to Huna Totem Corporation, an Alaska Native corporation tied to Huna with headquarters in Juneau. Mickey Richardson, Huna Totem's head of marketing and public relations, said the corporation likes to invest in local projects, and the majority of its shareholders live in Juneau.
Being locally owned and operated, we hope that the project will reflect the values of the Native people from Juneau and also the community of Juneau.
The corporation aims to submit plans to local planning officials for a tourism facility and dock by the end of the year. Richardson said the goal is to complete the project for the 2025 cruise season. The next step for Huna Totem will be to apply to the Planning Commission for a conditional use permit. That will be the public's next opportunity to provide comments. Huna Totem still needs permission from the city to develop and operate in the city-owned tidelands around the property. The Coast Guard and NOAA must also be on board if the project impacts their water access. Norwegian did not immediately respond when asked why the company gave away land it spent millions of dollars to acquire. In a press release, a Norwegian executive said the company wanted the project to integrate with the local community. The first day of school for Kodiak students is next week, and teachers in the Kodiak Island Borough School District are busily preparing for the upcoming year, including a group of newly arrived teachers from the Philippines. KMXD's Dylan Smart spoke to one of the new teachers and brings us this report.
Nori De Assis has wanted to be a teacher for as long as she can remember. She's been a physical education teacher in the Philippines for the last decade, and 5 years ago she decided that she wanted to teach in the United States. The pandemic delayed those plans, but she recently applied for a job with Kodiak High School, and she was hired as the physical education teacher for this school year.
I am so excited for the incoming school year. I am looking forward to meet the students. I am looking forward to meet the children. And we are all very excited.
De Assis is one of 7 educators hired by the Kodiak Island Borough School District under J-1 cultural exchange visas. The visas allow the teachers to work in the United States for 2 years before returning to the Philippines. These teachers are a breath of fresh air for the district, which has faced significant staffing shortages across all positions. KIBSD Superintendent Cindy Mika says the district will likely hire more teachers from the Philippines in the future to try and fill the vacancies. According to De Assis, teaching in the United States is not so different from teaching in the Philippines.
Since we are all teachers, we know that our first priority is the student. We do this for the students. The big difference is all of our resources are provided by the school district. And I am so thankful with the Kodiak Island Borough School District because we are well provided. The materials are already here.
Kodiak is a long way from the Philippines in more ways than one. According to De Assis, the new teachers flew for more than 24 hours to get to Kodiak. De Assis says the weather is also very different from the Philippines' tropical climate. Even so, she says that Kodiak already feels like home.
We have attended a lot of welcome parties. The community here is very kind. We feel that we are a part of a family, and it feels so warm, it feels so nice. We don't feel homesick because everyone here is very kind and very accommodating.
Kodiak teachers and students head back to school soon. The first day of class is Monday for middle and high schoolers. Elementary school students return to school on Tuesday. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
A U.S. Coast Guard investigation found an incident in which a Ketchikan taxi driver accidentally stowed away on a ferry bound for Prince of Wales Island resulted in a breach of security. In a statement, Coast Guard Lieutenant Alan Vorholt says investigators interviewed the captain and crew of the Inter-Island Ferry Authority vessel Stikine around midday Thursday. He says the Coast Guard is working with the IFA to prevent similar accidents in the future. IFA General Manager Ron Curtis said the cab driver was helping a passenger load a 70-inch TV onto the ferry Tuesday afternoon and, quote, didn't get off the boat in a timely fashion. The ferry Stikine made a U-turn and brought the cabbie back to Ketchikan shortly after departing. It arrived in Hollis on Prince of Wales Island just a few minutes behind schedule. Curtis said the ferry system conducted a mandatory review of its security plan with employees as a result of the incident, but he says no crew members will face discipline. Hundreds of Ukrainians who came to Alaska after Russia invaded their country 6 months ago are settling into their new home away from home. Many of the expatriates came to stay with family in Delta Junction, where they're enrolling their kids in schools and getting help learning the English language. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
29 students from Ukraine began classes last week in the Delta Greeley School District, which hired a full-time Slavic-speaking staff member to help them out with their classwork.
We recognized the need early on. We added another position and and we're thankful we did.
District Superintendent Sean Striley says fellow students also are helping the newcomers learn the language, especially those from Ukrainian immigrant families that began arriving in Delta in the 1990s.
We have young students even kind of helping with translating things and supporting their classmates with the language barriers that they experience. So it's working well.
Striley says the students range in grade level from kindergarten to the 12th grade, and they vary in their ability to communicate in English. Some have no experience with the language, and a few are fairly fluent. Those with little English proficiency attend classes with the other students in the morning, then spend the afternoon with the Slavic-speaking instructor. He says those with the greatest proficiency are the easiest to mainstream into classes, along with the local students.
We do have a couple high school students that are mainstream all day long because they're capable of handling the content and the language.
An instructor with the Literacy Council of Alaska says she encounters that same range of English proficiency among the growing group of Ukrainian adults that she's working with.
Right now we have about 26 enrolled and we have more families coming in.
Jill Prestigard is a volunteer language instructor with the Fairbanks-based Literacy Council.
It's teaching English skills to adults to prepare them for either work or to transition, you know, into the community.
Prestigard conducts English language classes twice a week at a church where many members of the local Slavic community worship, but last week the class took a field trip to the Delta Community Library.
They brought their children, we had a large group, and it was just really a great evening.
This was an effort to get them to know what resources we have and to feel comfortable in the library.
Library Director Tiki Levinson says the field trip also helped her figure out what kinds of materials the library needs to accommodate the newcomers, like Russian language books that many in the group asked for because most of them also speak that language. But she says the highlight of the evening was when she gave out library cards.
It was very exciting to be able to hand them that library card and just know the power of the resources that they could be able to access with that card.
Levinson says she was especially gratified to give a Russian-English dictionary to a young girl who wanted to understand what the kids at school were saying so she could join the conversation.
When I gave her the Russian language dictionary, she just hugged it to her chest and she looked absolutely elated.
Levinson says the new library patrons are starting to show up more often now, and she says she's working hard to increase the library's collection with the books and materials that they're asking for. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Every Sunday, Ernie Norton wakes up at 4 a.m. and heads to the public radio station in Kotzebue. It's been his routine for more than three decades. Ernie is the host of a gospel radio program on KOTZ, and as KBBI's Desiree Hagen reports, his show not only connects people around Northwest Alaska, but also the world.
If you find yourself in Northwestern Alaska on a Sunday morning and scan the radio dial, there's a good chance you'll hear the voice of Ernie Norton.
And for Sunday morning music, my name is Ernie, volunteer at your service here at KOTZ. Good morning.
Ernie, who turns 80 years old in November, wakes up every Sunday at around 4 a.m. to prepare for his gospel program. For 6 hours, from 6 a.m. until 12 noon, he rotates between spinning old gospel records, updating the local weather, and sending personal messages out over the KOTZ airwaves.
This is David Driggs. We're real proud of you, son. We're cheering for you even though we're not there.
With the tagline, "The Voice of the Arctic," KOTZ is the only radio station in the Kotzebue region, which serves over a dozen outlying villages. Its signal stretches as far west as Chukotka, Russia. But thanks to the internet, Ernie says his program reaches a broader audience.
There's people from Arizona, Ohio, California, Washington, Oregon. And I've had several calls from Europe. I think it was Sweden. Another guy that called from Germany.
It's been over 30 years since Ernie first started volunteering. Back then, Ernie says he just wanted a chance to listen to some of the old records in the station's library.
But I'm richer by far with a satisfied mind.
I remember the LP ones when I used to come over and play them, and they'd be warped because they're so old, and I'd have either have a quarter, nickel, or a dime to put on top of the arm to keep it from bouncing up and down. You know what I mean? So those were fun days.
In his time volunteering at the station, he transitioned from reel-to-reel machines, 8-tracks, cassette tapes, CDs.
And then now it's the computer system that I'm trying to learn.
But what makes his Sunday morning music program so unique and endearing? A lot of the music he plays is recorded right in the region. Besides an occasional Porter Wagoner or Emmylou Harris tune, most of the songs are performed by local musicians singing in a mixture of Inupiaq and English. Ernie says it started years ago. Listeners from nearby villages began sending in their homemade recordings, and he just kept playing them. He says eventually the radio station stepped in to help produce the recordings.
Back in year 2000, we had a fundraiser, and that's the first year that we did a local CD as a premium for our fundraiser. So that was, that's when it really started.
Now his gospel show is one of the most popular programs on KOTZ. At the peak of the pandemic, when most of the area's churches were closed, many listeners turned to Ernie's show for solace. Ernie thinks one of the reasons his show is so popular is that, unlike most religious programs, he doesn't preach. Ernie, who was raised in the Friends Church and now considers himself Episcopalian, says he takes a more universal approach to religion.
I've been to just about all the churches that I know of, I think. But what I found, all those churches I went to, God was still the same. He was still there.
And his appeal is universal, too. He says he often receives praise from some unlikely listeners.
And there's guys that say that, I don't go to church, but I listen to you every Sunday morning. And these are big and tough guys, you know. They don't cry. They don't, you know.
Ernie says hosting the show has helped him overcome his shyness. And it also keeps him busy. He retired over 3 years ago from his job as a commercial fisherman and working with a local village corporation. And while he says Sunday morning music requires a lot of work, he doesn't mind.
I look forward to Sunday morning 6 days a week. Those songs stay with you until the next Sunday. I found that out.
In the Northwest Arctic region, you can listen to Ernie's program on KOTZ Radio, 720 AM. Or anywhere else in the world, you can stream online Sunday morning from 6 a.m. until 12 noon at kotz.org. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from all over Alaska, Wesley Early in Anchorage, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Claire Strempel in Juneau, Dylan Samard in Kodiak, Eric Stone in Ketchikan, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, and Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.